My favorite headline this week involves the current arcade machine renaissance. Those that want an actual cabinet can get them. Those that want a fractional scale model but visually identical version can. And innovators can do fun, unique things too. Like NBA Jam Shaq Edition. Despite only ever playing as the Chicago Bulls in NBA Jam, reading about this still put a smile on my face. This is just one larger-than-life story. Now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki to tell you more about this and the rest of the week's gaming news. Starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, and we are live once again with episode number 903 of our show for tonight, February the 13th of 2022. My name is Rob Roberts, and I am joined by my co-hosts at the keyboard at the moment. Say hello to Techmaster Loki.
Hello.
Hi, Loki. How are you doing?
It's somewhat pain, but I'm okay.
Oh, no. All right. I want to ask about that. But quickly, I just want to say Dark Sakura is here. She had a cooking mama emergency in the other room. So don't worry. Sakura is fixing it right now with the cookie. She'll be right back. The pre-show video thing ended. I was going to let it go like another minute. And I was like, well, this is awkward. I guess I'll just start the show. The joys of being here live, because of course we do tape live every Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. Not tonight though. Bobby Blackwolf is enjoying 7-layer bean dip with friends tonight. Oh, hello. There's Dark Sakura back from Cooking Mama Emergency. Hey, Dark Sakura.
Hey.
Hey, did Mama fix it?
My couscous actually burned a little bit on my pot. So since it was a very expensive enamel Dutch oven. I had to get that scrubbed real quick before I put it in the dishwasher. Thankfully, I can dishwash it. It's fine, but I had to get the burnt couscous. But for people on camera, I have chicken and carrot and black truffle and onion in couscous with my homemade broth, and I've added cheese because that's what you do.
Did you bring enough for everyone?
You should see how much I have. I have two containers of it in the fridge. I used all my couscous thinking, this will make a little bit. No. It made a lot.
I would say I'm coming over, but things are a little busy with my move going on right now. So I've been talking about go ahead.
Well, if you want something to eat like on Thursday, I'm sure there'll be some left because Dan won't eat the couscous. I made it all for me, so I'll bring you some couscous.
I've been talking about it for a few weeks on the show, but I am moving. So Bobby, it's interesting. Bobby's not here tonight because of friends and chips and traditions and things like that.
The Owl Show.
Yeah, the Owl Show is on. Well, actually, I hear there was a really decent halftime show. I didn't catch it, but I heard it was pretty good. So I guess there's that. That's usually the way it is. There's a really cool concert that happens once a year, and then there's this little football game that they play before and after it. So apparently the concert kind of lived up to it this year. So
who cares about sports ball?
I know. Well, some people do. Whatever. I find it's more traditions for a lot of people. But anyway, so Bobby's not here tonight.
Tradition!
We won't be here next week because I'm moving. And I've been talking about this for a few weeks on the show. So technically, this is the last night in Studio N7. I haven't taken down any of the decorations yet. That'll probably be tomorrow. This studio, we've been using this probably for the last 7 years, I think is about as long as I've lived here. And so it's interesting because this studio space saw the end of our run on Shoutcast, which was audio only, and saw the beginning of Twitch for video, which is funny because this space wasn't really set up for Twitch, but we made it work. And here we are now taping virtually, which is what we're going to continue to do in 2 weeks when we come back with our next episode, where my setup will change drastically from what you see tonight. I'm not exactly sure what it will look like yet, but I will say that Alan and I got to go to the house and actually see everything this week. And it was really cool. I'm getting more and more excited. So very, very cool. I do want to welcome those of you in our chat room and big thank yous. I see the hype train going on in chat right now. Thank you so much to all of our live folks that are here despite the concert and game on TV right now. You all are here and super appreciate that. But of course, if you listen on our podcast feed, we appreciate that as well. I want to go back to Loki real quick before we get into the kickoff topic, because I didn't catch what's playing behind you tonight. It looks like a Zelda game, but like a DS thing.
Yes.
What is that?
Which game is it?
I can't tell from this far back. Is it Minish Cap?
No.
No, which one?
It's Spirit Tracks.
Oh, okay. All right. What made you decide
to duck your hat on? Well, because the DS Zelda games are awesome, and they really should bring them to the Switch. When we're talking about like how like, oh yes, it would be completely ruined if we brought like a game that Nintendo made to mobile, like Mario. Whereas I think actually Zelda would work very well because it worked well in the DS. It was mainly using the stylus, and so that is a possibility. I still wouldn't want to see them come to mobile, just put them on the Switch, but like, you know, it would still be kind of cool.
Yeah. Going to our chat over twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Pod Culture says, no more live shows ever. Never say never. Never say never ever. On that note, Loki brought up Nintendo and Zelda, so I think we should probably talk about the big surprise. Never say never to a new Nintendo Direct, because once again, we had no idea it was coming. And then, you know, in the middle of the week, they said, bam, you're going to get a new Nintendo Direct tomorrow. And it happened. And I got to say, we'll recap everything they talked about. But I've got to say, I couldn't watch it live, which was a bummer. I just had work obligations, which, you know, work is more important. So I had to take care of that. And then I was going to watch it like on stream delayed to get reactions. But I got Twitter notifications pushed to my phone that kind of spoiled the big news. So I was like, all right, I guess I'll just read up on it. So I never watched the Nintendo Direct. I just saw the bullet points, but it still sounded like it was a pretty action-packed, good Direct, for all things considered. I saw some folks online that were very meh about it, which kind of surprised me. I thought there was a lot of good stuff in it. But let's talk about some of the big headlines that were in the Direct. Do you have it up, Loki, or you want me to talk about it?
Yeah, so it was all right. I mean, there was some big announcements, I guess. There's a lot of games I just don't play the series of, so it's not like, you know, I was super hyped about things. But, you know, overall, they had some pretty good
stuff
things
I'm interested in.
Yeah, there's lots of, like, interesting things on there.
Like Chrono Cross.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that, and the Satellaview stuff that they have for that as well, which is kind of neat.
You know, that one was rumored. You know, for all the crap we get about reporting on rumors sometimes, that Chrono Cross, I remember, was a thing like 4 weeks ago, because we were wondering, why are they doing Chrono Cross and they won't touch Chrono Trigger? I remember that discussion coming up a few weeks ago on the show. It does seem like those Square Enix remasters of like Secret of Mana, you know, and so forth are bringing fruit. Although I guess Chrono Cross is not really a remaster. It's just kind of repackaged for the Switch, I suppose. And I would bet mobile. I don't think they're going to only have it on the Switch. It's got to be for mobile as well, because that's been Square's MO lately. So,
yeah. So they showed off a Fire Emblem Three Houses Musou game. So they've got Fire Emblem Warriors, I guess. Fire Emblem Warriors Three Hopes. So I believe that's the sequel to the last game that they had come out.
I think they had
a Warriors game already.
Those Warriors games do pretty well on the Switch. Like, you know, obviously the Hyrule Warriors, you know, has done very well on the Switch.
That's pretty good.
There was the Persona one.
I'm just so sick of Fire Emblem, but, you know, some people like it, so it's fine.
Well, I think it's going to be a completely different style for Fire Emblem too. So, you know, I think it works for the Musou type of, you know, game. So I think it'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. What else? So No Man's Sky is coming to the Switch. That's pretty interesting to see that actually happening.
I've been asked about my thoughts on this one because I'm kind of the resident No Man's Sky fanboy a little bit. I mean, I'm all for more people getting exposed to the game. And there are people that will get to play it on Switch who haven't played it on other platforms yet. And I know a lot of the concern is it going to run on the Switch? It'll run on the Switch. I mean, it runs on an OG PlayStation 4 and an OG Xbox One. It doesn't run very well. I would imagine they're going to be targeting a lower resolution, especially when the game is handheld. So they'll probably be able to do some things, but I it's not going to be ideal. I don't think it's going to be the ideal way to play No Man's Sky unless your gaming is largely portable. If you take transit a lot, or, you know, you just happen to play Switch in portable mode, then hey, having the No Man's Sky experience portable will be kind of nice. But I don't think it'll be the optimal way to play it. But I'm all for more people coming on board, and I hope it retains the cross-play functionality because it'll be one of those few games that play across Sony, PC, Microsoft, and Switch. So it'd be pretty cool.
We have a new Mario Strikers game. So that's Mario Strikers Battle League. That's coming out on June 10th, mm-hmm. which looked kind of cool.
That's the series I don't really care about, but cool.
Yeah. As we mentioned, Chrono Cross, the remaster is coming to Switch on April 7th. There was the announcement of Mother and Earthbound being added to Nintendo Switch Online. So for the NES and SNES.
Finally.
Live Alive makes me happy.
Yeah, Live Alive, that's getting ported and remastered on the Switch, which is pretty awesome. And they have like voice acting in there and stuff.
I'm just going to say, Live Alive, I think, was the biggest and best news in the entire Direct.
Clonoa.
I'm gonna say why I think the Live Alive was the biggest and best news. It's because unlike the Chrono Cross one and some of the other things we've seen Square Enix do, and I'm gonna kind of toot on something I said months ago on this show, we're seeing Square leverage that Octopath Traveler / Triangle Strategy engine for something really different now. And I remember when I brought this up. It was when I was reviewing that game Dungeon Encounters. Remember when that came out a couple months? It was by the minds behind Final Fantasy XII, kind of created this very minimalistic RPG. And some people are super into it. And I liked it, but I didn't understand why it had to be minimalistic. And I said, they've got this engine. Why aren't they using this engine to build more things? And that kind of went into the talk about what if the Final Fantasy remasters ended up in this engine or something like this.
Oh, I love that.
Right?
I love that.
But, well, it's not Final Fantasy remaster, but I feel like it's something adjacent is now going into this engine, and I think that's really exciting. And between that and the Chrono Cross news, I think we should all cross our fingers, cross our toes, hold our breath, that's why Chrono Trigger is taking so long. That Chrono Trigger is going to, like, maybe Live Alive is like a test to kind of port these sorts of games over, and maybe Chrono Trigger is going to get the Triangle Strategy Octopath treatment. I know it's a wild theory, but I just think that was the most exciting news, I think, out of the whole Direct. It's interesting. I know people that really love that game. I must admit, I know of it. I'm not very familiar with it. So it is, you know, especially for those of us in this, you know, in the States and, you know, North America who have never really experienced that before, except through a translated ROM. It's almost like it's a new product of sorts, but I think, you know, it's neat that Square is digging into the vaults. Meanwhile, Nintendo kind of does the bare minimum of finally putting their Earthbound ROMs up on the service. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I'm happy. I'm thrilled for that. That's great. But of course, we're all sitting here going, Mother 3, when?
And everyone's like, and they're like, nope.
And even the Earthbound creator was out there on Twitter going, I didn't know this was going to happen. I'm really happy that folks are getting to play this. Yeah, I'd love to see Earthbound 3 happen too. You know, is in this. And then, of course, I'm sure Reggie was fucking teasing Earthbound 3 as always, or Mother 3, excuse me, as always. So it's just silly. I'm glad the games are finally where they need to be. I'm glad they didn't put it on the Plus version of the service or anything stupid like that. And I'm really glad about Live Alive.
Yeah. Some other announcements that they had. So they have some collections coming to the Switch that are getting ported over. So there's a Portal Companion Collection, which is Portal 1 and 2. There's also the Klonoa series that's getting ported over as well. Front Mission First is a remake of the first Front Mission game that's going to be coming out on the Switch as well. They showed off a trailer for the Salmon Run Next Wave, which is part of Splatoon 3. What else?
Oh, and Splatoon 3 is this summer. I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't expect we'd get it that fast, to be honest.
Yeah, this summer. They showed off a new trailer for Kirby and the Forgotten Land. So that looked funny with the mouthful mode. And what else? New trailer for Triangle Strategy, which was kind of less exciting after the Live Alive announcement. Then, some of the bigger stuff. So now we're getting a Wii Sports kind of sequel with Nintendo Switch Sports, which I could have done without their demonstration of volleyball, but cool.
This is that game where it's like, of course, like this is what we should have had at the beginning instead of 1-2 Switch. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of surprising, you know, especially with how huge Wii Sports was. And, you know, and in my brain, I went, boy, they really should have done this for the Wii U. And I neglect. Oh, they did. Oops. But the Wii U kind of fizzled out that fast. I completely forgot. And I think most people did. Let's be real. So this is one of Nintendo's biggest titles. It's weird to think about, but it is. So it's nice that Nintendo Switch is finally like getting its due with, and it's one of those things where it's like, oh, of course they had to announce this someday. Like, this seems very logical that we'd get here at some point. I just really wanted to get some comments from chat real quick. Mike Deft is talking about Klonoa, which I know Dark Sakura was excited about too. And Mike Deft says, yeah, the Klonoa 1 is running on the same base they used for the Wii remake, but they're using the old models. Klonoa 2 looks like a simple remaster, which I'm fine with. I'm so happy we got Klonoa again. And Dark Sakura, I'm sure you echo that a little bit as well for getting Klonoa.
Yeah. Speaking of stuff also being ported over, I forgot about the Force Unleashed is being ported over from, it's the Wii version that they're bringing to the Switch, which it's really showing its age. what else? So other bigger announcements, Xenoblade Chronicles 3 coming to the Switch in September. It looks amazing.
Another one of those. Oh, of course this would happen at some point. I think for me, I was more impressed with the speed. I mean, this is something I wouldn't have expected for a couple years, but actually it came up in Discord. I shared that comment over on our Discord over at vognetwork.com/Discord. I was kind of talking about that, and somebody did say, you know, the chatter is that they actually started 2 and 3 around the same time, kind of knowing they were going to make it a trilogy the whole time. So this has just been sort of, you know, finished up after 2 released, basically.
So we got the news that there's probably not going to be a new Mario Kart 9 until at least 2024. That's because Mario Kart 8 is getting more DLC, 48 new tracks that have been ported over from, or remastered, I guess, from other Mario Kart games, including Mario Kart Tour, which is the mobile game. Hmm. So those are going to be coming this year and in next year. And it's like $25 for the DLC. And of course, they're throwing that into the expansion pass as well. But
smart.
Not a bad deal for 48 tracks over the course of, you know, a few years. But yeah, no Mario Kart 9 anytime soon.
I see it as them trying to sweeten the pot with their expansion pass. I think they're overcharging for what it is, quite honestly, especially with no new characters. I think they're really trying to push people to that pass because now. Yeah, they've got that. They've got, of course, the Genesis and, you know, the Nintendo 64 stuff. And they've got the Animal Crossing, right? So I think they're really trying to push.
Yeah, why can't they do more characters? Like, I'm surprised that they're not doing that.
I don't know. You know, have you seen a lot of the, you know, discourse about that the tracks didn't look great in the preview? Some folks thought that they were kind of plain.
Well, they were, like, because they were, at least the one example they were showing, like, they completely changed the way it looks. And it looks a lot more simpler.
Yeah.
From, you know, it's not as nice looking as even the mobile version, which I'm kind of surprised.
Well, but I mean, to some extent, like I understand a map like what Choco Mountain was on there, right? From the N64. I think we caught a glimpse of that.
That looked all right.
Yeah. But I mean, but if you think about it, the N64, that's the problem when you kind of upscale a lot of those old maps. They were plain because the N64 could only handle so much.
I don't
much.
Think they were necessarily referring to the Nintendo 64 stuff. I think they're talking about the Mario Kart Tour maps.
Yeah.
Being kind of like downscaled almost. I think the retro tracks are obviously going to look better because they're based off older versions of the game and they have a lot more room to add detail and stuff to it. So it'll make it look nicer. But when you take something from Mario Kart Tour, which is probably running, I don't really know how well the mobile game runs or what the hardware requirements are for that, but like, you know, it probably has some better fidelity to it and a little bit more detail in the models and stuff in the tracks. And so they're probably not able to pull that down into the Switch and maintain a good frame rate. So they're obviously going to make some, you know, alterations to kind of do that. And we're talking about, like, what it looks like based off of an early shot that, you know, who knows when this is coming out, and it's just like a few second clips, so it's very subjective right now.
True. I think it's interesting, though, especially with all the rumors about Mario Kart 9, which obviously, I mean, it could have been people
mistaking.
That'll
be the next Switch.
I agree.
Switch to HD.
Yeah, it's
it'll be a launch title.
Yeah, Mario. The next Mario Kart is going to be for whatever Nintendo's successor to the Switch is. It's going to be the next console. I think at this point, Mario Kart 8 is kind of like the full life of the Switch. And
bring Mario Kart 8 again, and they'll just make it Mario Kart Infinity. We'll turn the 8 sideways, you know?
Well, honestly, I think we'd all love a Mario Kart game that just encompasses every single track, right? Take the Smash Brothers.
We're kind of getting there. How many tracks are left?
Take the Smash Brothers approach. Everyone is here, right? Every character and every track from a prior game. Why not?
Seriously, think about that, though, because like, if you look at it, you know, a lot of the tracks in some of the other games, I don't remember when they started recycling tracks a little bit. Maybe that was DS. But, like, there's a lot of the other games have just tracks from other titles in there. Like, I can't imagine that we're left with many unique tracks from, you know, just in general. And also, why can't they just make new tracks? You know,
well,
why does it have to be
parts did they of older say tracks? Every track was recycled, or are people inferring
every track
that
is,
because
no, it's what
oh,
they said.
Oh, I thought there was still room for new tracks.
No.
Interesting.
I mean, they still could put more DLC out there. I think that they should put the pass out for the tracks and maybe have like some additional characters or something that they should throw in there. Like, I don't know.
I would have thought that maybe since Mario Kart Tour kind of ended up fizzling, maybe there were some planned things for that they would push over. That's where I thought they might squeeze some new tracks from, but I guess not. Interesting. All right. Anything else?
No, that's, I think, it. I'm trying to think back if there was any other announcements that they kind of showed off. There was like some updates for Metroid Dread that's going to be coming out, so they have a few different difficulty modes, like basically a one-hit death mode that's going to be a dread mode that's coming out soon. And then also they're having an easier mode that's in there as well. And then they're going to be adding later on a boss rush mode that's going to be coming.
I'm glad to hear that Metroid's getting a Bobby Blackwolf mode. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they showed off a new trailer for Advance Wars 1 and 2 Reboot Camp. That's coming out on April 8th.
The only thing I wanted to comment on that I didn't catch was the Portal. So they're doing like Portal 2 on the Switch, basically.
Yeah, I thought it was Portal 1 and 2.
Is it 1 and 2? Well, yeah. It sounds like kind of a repackaging of the games, which, you know, those. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Portal. I love that series. It's cool that it's portable, but it's also.
Who hasn't played it at this point?
But you know what would be neat about it? And I didn't see this to the point, but there were also those fan released level edits that I thought they went back and put on Steam. And it would be nice if the Switch version included those.
Well, what struck me as odd is that, you know, of course there's that whole like, yay, let's get Portal portable, but we have the Steam Deck. So it seems weird that Valve is lending Portal over to the Nintendo Switch when
I don't think so.
I mean, but Portal would still be a great reason to get a Steam Deck. It's just interesting that Valve is doing that. That's all.
Portal is old. No one's going to get a Steam Deck for Portal.
Yeah, true. I guess there's that.
I mean, on top of that, how many different versions of the orange box did they put out? And, you know,
it should have been the orange box.
Well, Portal 2 has been released on everything, and then they've had all the edits and everything. Portal 2 right now is old enough that it's not going to be a Steam Deck seller. What would be a Steam Deck seller is being able to have, you know, some of the current biggest games that will work on the Steam Deck from multiple publishers. That's what's going to sell a Steam Deck. Or for people, you know, like me, who doesn't have exactly a PC-capable you know, system, although I've worked around it and I don't need a Steam Deck now, but that's what's going to sell a Steam Deck. I don't think Portal 2 is remotely going to be in the ballpark of it. Sorry.
Interesting. Pod Culture in chat says, to be clear, I'm not exactly saying like, oh God, people are getting Steam Decks just for Portal, but I just think it's interesting that Valve is giving an exclusive to Nintendo at this same time that they have a console now that they're putting out basically that could benefit from all sorts of exclusives.
I mean, it's so just additional sales. It's not even really, I mean, it's like, it's it's a game that came out on the Xbox 360. You know, that's several years ago.
Like, yeah, I'm not sure there's a huge audience for this to begin with, except for the fact that I think this is the reality, too, and something we all have to kind of just is that there are going to be kids out there that were 8 when Portal 2 first came out that are now approaching 20 that maybe are going to be playing these games for the first time because they were a little young for it the first time. I think there's. I think that's where the audience for these games are, quite honestly. As 200 Matt says, don't say that, Rob. Sorry, it is what it is. I really think that's where the audience is. Pod Culture says Portal 3 would be a Steam Deck seller. Now, that would be too easy for Valve to do. But
it wouldn't be just on Steam, though. Yes. It would be on every
platform. We know that they can't count to 3 anyway.
Well, yes. That is true.
How long did it take Capcom to learn how to count to 3?
A long time. But yes, Steam Deck is not isolated in its own world. But still, even just the fact that Portal 3, you know, all these years later is still not a thing is interesting to me. But it is what it is. Valve has their plan, I guess. So, all right. Well, I thought it was a very solid Nintendo Direct at the end of the day. A lot of good announcements. I thought there was some really good surprises in there, especially the Live Alive and, you know, Chrono Cross and just Klonoa. A lot of good stuff coming back and a lot of, you know, forward-looking stuff. I think the Mario Kart tracks was kind of a surprise. Splatoon 3 not being holiday.
Still not
being
paying for their service. I mean, like, I know it's like kind of stupid just to buy it outright, but I'm going to buy it outright. I'm not supporting that expansion pass service.
Yeah, I'm still on the fence. I mean, honestly, I'm not playing enough Mario Kart 8. I'm not sure I would even get the tracks.
I'm on JD's plan, so I spent so little on it anyway that it doesn't matter.
There you go. All right, well, let's talk about the types of things that we are playing this week, Nintendo Switch or otherwise, and how was your gaming week? So we'll start with Dark Sakura. How was your gaming week? What have you been playing this week?
I played stuff. Of course, Dead by Daylight. They've disabled Nurse, which is kind of weird for me because I said after rank reset, which is, yesterday?
Yes, today.
Yeah, that my plan was to go back and practice Nurse a lot more. Although what I'm also doing is, I've got my first P350, which is Freddy.
Oh, congrats.
And I finally decided to prestige Pig. So now I am doing nothing but putting all of my points on, in Miss Pigu so that I can, make her my second P350. And for those who don't know, every time you hit 50, you can prestige, but you can only prestige 3 times, and then you get another achievement when you hit 50 on prestige level 3. I've also figured out how to rip the models from Dead by Daylight now and import them into Blender.
I saw you tweeting some of this stuff. It was interesting.
Yeah, they actually redid Pig's face when they put out the new cosmetic. So before that, her face was just sort of like almost kind of flat. And now she actually, like for the head, actually goes with that outfit that I have on her. There's a different head for the mask, you know, the mask with the bear trap crown.
Right.
The mask with the bear trap crown has, like, a sort of a shaded kind of, like, under the Batman mask sort of makeup thing. Her regular face is all covered in blood, which she didn't even get that bloody in the real movies. Even when she got shot in the neck, she didn't get that bloody. So I thought it was really, really interesting. I still haven't figured out how to get the skeletons imported right so that I can use some other animation stuff. But really, my goal is just to convert her to a VTube thing anyway. Huh. And I'm going to be trying to edit the face mesh to look a little bit more realistic. I'm going to stylize it quite a bit. But right now, I've got my first work done. And I'm also going to rip a Meg.
A V-tube
in the pig mask
thing.
So I don't have to animate her face.
Interesting. Okay.
So actually I tried to apply Jill's face to Pig. And the survivor's heads are a little bit smaller. So the eye holes are like here, like right where normal eyes are, and then like the actual
your cam's
eyeballs
not on, just so you know.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh crap. Okay, sorry. So the eyes would be like right here. You know, where normal eye, the eye holes would be there, but like the eyeballs themselves, since the eyeballs are part of the face mesh, are like under like where the cheekbone would be. Whereas, you know, Amanda's are like right in the right place. So I kind of need to figure out how to. I haven't done mesh editing except for like VTube Studio, which is really simple. So this is going to be a test of my skills. So wish me luck. But my eventual goal is to get Jill's face applied over Amanda's mask so that at least it's a decent looking face. So anyway, and going, I also need to double check what eye color Shawnee had. I forgot her last name, but she was the actress that played Amanda in Saul. So I need to look up her eye color and make sure that there's the right one. So anyway, going though to other games I've been playing, of course, I did Fantasian, which I have Fantasian Friday, and I had to restart on a couple of things. And I also started doing a retro stream on Saturday night after work, and I played The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past.
Oh,
and
fine.
I have lost a lot of skills in that game because I haven't played it in 10 years. So, and he was like, oh, where was this shit? Where was that shit? Do I get the Zora? No, I can't get the Zora thing because I need to get the glove. And so I'm on to getting the glove, although I finished the first palace.
Nice.
I always never know what to call, what was his name? Like Sahasrara, the old man. Mm-hmm. So I call him Sarsaparilla.
That works.
I called him Scheherazade once. But Dan and I do that as like if we find someone with a kind of a complicated name, even though we can pronounce it, we still kind of screw it up. And then I actually have a translated copy of Live Alive that I intended to start until the Direct came out.
The timing.
So, right. And I also played Radiant Silver Gun for Saturn.
Oh, fun.
On my Mac.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. I've managed to get PC Engine and Saturn games, and I think I might be able to get a PlayStation 1 to work next. I'm still trying to find Robit Mundo, which I would prefer to have an original of, mind. But, you know, I'll play it any way I can. The game's, like, older than some people I know.
But...
And then, of course, you know, I played Wordscapes because that's what I do. And just... Yeah.
All right.
Watching friends play stuff, trying to see what's interesting. You know, some people are playing that Lost Ark. I can't play it. So, oh, and of course, Mass Effect 2, which I was able to get running in my my Parallels.
Oh, fun.
So, and I also got my my SteelSeries controller working. Yay. My old one, my Nimbus.
I'm sad I missed your retro stream. I was hosting, like, my gaming week is a little thin because I was hosting shows are starting to come back with precautions, but I was hosting last night was Rocky Horror, and then two nights ago was a burlesque variety thing, so I was very busy out doing that. But I know you messaged me that you were going to do it, and I was like, oh darn, I would have watched while I was packing boxes if I wasn't out and about. So,
well, I'm kind of getting to the point where I'm just going to throw up the cheats on it just because really I'm playing it for the experience of playing the game, and I don't care. I'm at least using the save states because, you know, when you die, you start over. There's one battle that even when I was super good at the game still always gave me problems, and that was that big, stupid, giant worm that's in the second... Is it the second or third?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I hate that thing. I don't even know what it was, but I always would just, like, it would take me for, like, even in the newer one, The Link Between Worlds, that gave me fits, too. It was a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
So, I'm just, like, I'm just cheat to win. I don't care. I'm playing it for the story. It doesn't matter. I'm the one playing the game. If anyone has a problem with it, fuck you.
All right.
I'm the one playing the game, and you're not.
You don't know anyone. You play the way you want on your stream, and that's, well, if they don't like it, then go somewhere else.
It's just been like lately I've seen a slew of people like complaining about how people are enjoying things. I'm like, it's not hurting you.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Seriously. I am like right now at the point where I'm just like, I don't give a shit. I'm the one playing it. You can deal with it.
There you go. All right, let's go over to Loki. How was your gaming week?
So it's Minecraft. But it's also, I finished playing, well, as of right now, because they're constantly updating the game, but I have completed the entire game of Power Wash Simulator.
So, oh, wow.
All the things have been power washed now.
Congrats.
So, yeah, that was fun. But now, yeah, I wish there's more to do in there. And then Minecraft, I've been extremely busy the last week or so. So I was working on a sorting system and storage system. So that was kind of this entire week. And I'm putting together my new episode. Well, I started it this morning. So it should be hopefully out in the next couple days.
All right.
That's it.
My gaming week, as I mentioned, was a little bit slower just with all the other commitments going on. I did still play way too much Dead by Daylight. I got my Adept Claudette achievement today, so yay.
Yay! And
I got Fang to level 10, so I'm going to get hers next. So just kind of working my way through those for no particular reason. It's just a fun,
silly
thing to do.
I need you to still help me with my Michaela Adept.
Yeah, sure. Just
but I don't want to lose my 100% survival rate.
Well, then don't play with me, because I have had some sweaty ass. I had a basement Bubba today. I haven't seen that gag in like 6 months, and I just forget how exhausting that is to like go down there and rescue someone in the basement, and then and it's like, oh, fucking really?
I have to tell you, I thought of a way to do a basement pig, but I was gonna call it a pantry pig, and I decided instead to call it basement bacon.
Okay.
So, more on that later.
All right. And then I've still been playing Final Fantasy 14, been pretty much capping my red tomes every week and working on my gear for my Gunbreaker, which is kind of my main class that I play in that game. And then otherwise playing GPS games. Ingress started their second Sunday mission thing officially. They've been kind of doing it unofficially for a few months now, and now the official one started this month today with the new badge. So, you know, the walking incentive stuff has been really good. I guess I haven't really mentioned this on OLR. I've talked about it on social media, but, you know, I've talked about some of my health issues over the past few months. I'm down over 30 pounds at this point with all the changes that I've made since that happened. And, you know, honestly...
Awesome.
I mean, obviously, I've been working very hard with, you know, diet and all that stuff too, but the GPS games, Pikmin, Ingress, Pokemon Go, which I actually picked up again, which I hadn't played in a while, those have been huge in, like, gamifying steps so that I actually get more steps every day, so that I really push myself to go out on a walk and things like that is very big. Thank you. I see the kind words in chat. Yeah, it's funny. Somebody came up to me after Rocky last night and was like, oh yeah, you look great. I saw you in October and yeah, I could tell that you'd put on COVID weight. You know, I know it was well-intentioned because she was like, we all have, you know, she was that kind of thing. And then she was like, oh, but you're looking great. And it's nice. It's a very nice thing. And I didn't want to tell her like, well, I got diagnosed with diabetes, and it really whips your ass into gear. But
well, and we do also need to stop, what's the word I'm thinking of? Equivocating size with aesthetics.
Right, and the person I was sitting with who kind of listened to all that, because I kind of actually leaned in their ear, and I said, it's a good thing I didn't say, oh, I got, you know, the type 2 diabetes will do that to you. And then my friend actually said, this is why I don't comment on people's bodies, because you don't know people's stories, you know? And that's kind of my approach too. I'm always afraid I'm going to say something like, oh, you've lost weight, and then shock, they gained it, and I'm just an idiot, you know? So I just try not to comment on that sort of thing at all, unless somebody else tells me first, oh, I've lost weight, or, oh, I'm trying to put on weight for whatever. It's like, oh, congrats. Are you meeting your goals? Okay, cool. Good for you. Goals are great.
I like to tell people that they're looking healthy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, health, not necessarily whether or not they've lost weight, but if I see that they've got a glow to their skin and they're energetic, I'm like, oh, you're looking really healthy today.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, because that is completely independent. Now, if they happen to have lost weight in order to improve their health, then that ties in with it. Happy for them. I mean, I'll be honest, I was feeling a little bit shallow when I lost all that weight with my surgery. But, you know, it's size isn't a judge of health.
Totally agree. And I it's one of those things where weight loss is a very nice side effect of all this other bullshit. And that's kind of just how I've explained it, is that, you know, I'll take it. As far as that, if I'm going to work hard, sure, I'll take weight loss. Why not? It's fun. All right. Anyhow, let's move on. We're going to get into some other news. Of course, I've mentioned this a few times, so I just want to make sure y'all know there will be no new OLR next week. I know it's kind of a random week to not have a show, but it is because of the move. So we'll be back in 2 weeks. So that means no podcast, no live show. But Bobby Blackwolf will be here. So for the Sunday night loyal crowd over at twitch.tv/VOGNetwork, you will have something to watch next week. And for those of you on the podcast feed, there is a huge library of back episodes available over at orangelaungeradio.com or VOG Network under Orange Lounge Radio if you want to listen to an oldie moldy episode of OLR to pass the time next week. All right, let's get into some news, and let's talk about a game that a lot of people have been playing this week. And I wish I had had time to download it, install it, play it myself, but I said I'm going to wait till after this moving stuff to get sucked into this. So, Loki, tell us about this.
Yeah, so the new, I guess new for us, MMO Lost Ark has reached a record number of players on Steam with 1.3 million online at peak. And that is the third most game or played game in the history based off active concurrent players. Just not bad. Not bad at all. And then, of course, when we're looking at this, I think it even beat out CSGO, because CSGO wow. had their record was 1.3. It's like 1,308,000, and I think now they're just past that as well. So,
pretty impressive. PUBG's through the roof, right? Because you know when
PUBG's like 3.2 million.
Pre Fortnite, there were a ton of people playing PUBG. So yeah.
So, not those numbers anymore, but yeah, at its heyday, it was pretty high up there. So, that's pretty great for a brand new MMO for at least the U.S. and Europe. I know this came out originally in South Korea in 2019, but yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Well, you know, it's
I can't sink myself into an MMO at this point, though.
It's free to play, which is that's a huge sure. part of why a lot of people are able to get into it. Amazon has been doing a huge push through Twitch. You know, you probably saw an ad for Lost Ark before you got here on OLR tonight. And that's smart. That's Amazon leveraging, the fact that they run Twitch to put in some ads and, get the hype going for this game, which also seemed to work well for New World. Even though New World kind of went, like, I feel like New World was very much a flash in the pan. So that I know it sounds really harsh, but like honestly, like it came and went. Like, sorry to fans of that game. You don't need my validation to have fun with the game, but it just definitely seems like Lost or New World was kind of the it girl for like a weekend, and then suddenly faded out real quick. So I'm curious what the staying power of this is going to be. If this ends up ended up being a tide that comes in really heavy and then recedes really quick, or if this really does end up being something that stays around. And that's part of the reason I've been waiting a little bit to jump on board with it. I mean, my personal life doesn't really give me the time right now to download, fight queues, and do all that with something new. But, if it's still relevant in a couple weeks and my friends are still playing it, I would definitely want to check it out. Looking at some comments from chat, Questbuster says launch was also delayed by several hours because of the demand on the 11th, but founders were able to get in a few days before that. Questbuster continuing, who also had commented that they've been playing a lot of it this week. It's a ton of fun, but the first few hours are a bit slow. They tightened some of the experience up from what I had played from the Russian version. So it is also interesting that a game that's technically already existed for quite some time, yes, in other parts of the world and other localizations, it's interesting that it's so popular. And now I'm curious to see, because of this, what else is going to suddenly show up that's been out for a long time in other places. We'll see. Any interest in Lost Ark? I think Darsaka already said pass, but Loki, did you... You have any interest in Lost Ark?
No, I can't jump into it.
Well, I can't
at this point.
there's no Mac. Even though, yeah.
I don't think it runs on Windows ARM either.
Oh, bummer. All right. All right. Well, moving on. Let's talk about Call of Duty because, of course, with the pending purchase of Microsoft to buy Activision Blizzard, a lot of people have been presuming that Call of Duty is going to end up an exclusive, and it certainly would make a lot of sense that it would go that direction. However, this is very interesting. The president of Microsoft, Brad Smith, made a blog post saying, Microsoft will continue to make Call of Duty and other popular Activision Blizzard titles available on PlayStation through the term of any existing agreement with Activision. And we have committed to Sony that we will also make them available on PlayStation beyond the existing agreement and into the future so that Sony fans can continue to enjoy the games they love. We are also interested in taking similar steps to support Nintendo's successful platform. We believe this is the right thing for the industry, for gamers, and for our business. Many folks that are a little more skeptical about these sorts of things, and I don't blame them, thinking that this might be Microsoft's way to sort of respond to the fact that the FTC is all up in this business for the approval of the takeover and so forth. So perhaps Microsoft committing to supporting Sony platforms is going to help them get through this, I guess, or what have you. Now, maybe I'm just being a jerk, but I don't think I am. I would still be highly skeptical of all this. Call of Duty will come out for PlayStation. You know, if they said it, they're going to do it. But it doesn't mean it's going to be the version you want, because I think we're definitely going to see the extra maps, extra characters, extra stuff is going to be the definitive version will be the Microsoft version. The Sony version will be an afterthought, as will honestly probably Nintendo's, just because of the limitations of the platform. Now, of course, in a couple years when we're talking about Nintendo's successor platform, that's a different conversation, but I still think Microsoft would be foolish to not have Call of Duty be the must play experience on their own platform. And will Sony do the same thing with Destiny and whatever Bungie has cooking for the future? Abso-fucking-lutely. Abso-fucking-lutely. And of course, Microsoft also gets Call of Duty on Game Pass, which is going to be huge. And they can continue to charge $60 on PlayStation at launch. I think a lot of it is just that illusion of supporting everything equally. And I'm not so sure it really is. But I guess that's nice for people that never, ever want to get a Xbox or play on their PC, I suppose. So, all right, let's move on. Dark Sakura.
I had to unmute my mic. Every time I click it, it actually immediately remutes itself. It's so weird. Huh. But at any rate, I remember going to E3 and always finding like the America's Army area. And they were like always like, oh, play this. You'll see, you know, and then sign up for the rest of your life. Well, they, and honestly, it was a really revolutionary idea to use a video game as a recruitment tool 20 years ago. Now, though, they have, you know, it's free to play. It was really successful. A lot of people said it was really fun. But as of May 5th this year, they are going to shut down the servers. And it's going to be retired. So, the thing with this particular game and something like it is that it really was a novel concept when it came out. You know, yeah, we all knew, oh, this is a recruitment tool, but it also was supposedly a really good game. I mean, right? And, I mean, we had so many different, you know, military-related games come out over the years, but, you know, America's Army was only supposed to last for 7 years. But it was so successful that they, actually the Pentagon approved spending more than $3 million a year to promote the game and expand upon it. I mean, and right now their recruiting budget, I think is like $8 billion. So that's not, I mean, that's only a small percentage of their recruiting budget, but still it is a big chunk of change.
Yeah.
And then they said, you know, there was a study in 2008 from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, so MIT, that said that 30% of all Americans ages 16 to 24 had a more positive impression of the Army because of the game. And the game had a large impact on recruiting. So it was clearly successful. I mean, the Army has a Twitch channel.
Well, yes, I know about that, but that hasn't always been good news, because that was the one where people were going in there and asking about war crimes, and so they would get banned. But then it was like, well, the government can't ban people. It's freedom of speech, right? So it started that whole interesting conversation and how there are protocols on that. But going back to the game itself, yeah, I mean, I've no interest in the game. I'm not going to play it or really cover it on this show beyond these interesting pop culture and gaming culture notes. But everything I've heard is that for what it is, you would expect that it's a shitty game. Usually these types of games are pretty shitty. Like, you know, when corporations and the Army, in a sense, is a corporation trying to cash
the corporation.
Yeah. Trying to cash in on what the cool kids enjoy, right, is usually kind of doesn't work out very well. But apparently this was a pretty decent game from what I heard. So that's part of why it was successful, is that, you know, and I realize people have their criticisms and it's fine, but it seems like the people that were making this game were actually listening to what gamers kind of wanted to play and actually developing a game that would be fun and not what research groups said would be fun.
A boring recruitment tool won't recruit anybody.
Right.
So, well, the other thing too is like the Federal Aviation Administration had a hiring campaign. They were looking for 4,300 air traffic controllers in about 5 years, and they focused on gamers. And they met, I think supposedly are already well on their way to hitting their goal. But a lot of, you know, these different institutions now are eyeing games and gamers for their hiring base, you know, because certain skills, hand-eye coordination, you know, of course, would carry over. And then they also, you know, can judge mindsets by what type of games people are playing, you know. So there's a lot of, you know, very interesting psychology that goes into it. But, you know, and of course, there's also then putting out, you know, I call it the Last Starfighter syndrome. Who all remembers that movie?
It's been a long time.
Where, you know, they put out the arcade machine and it was a test to see who was going to be the next Starfighter. And then the guy gets kidnapped and goes to outer space, and, you know, and then his robot twin makes out with his girlfriend. But anyway, they're using different games also as sort of disguised tests for certain skill sets. And so, you know, I just still think it's very interesting that we have so many government facilities that are like, oh, games are bad, blah, 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 blah. And the Army's like, fuck yeah, games.
Yeah.
We're going to use these games. We're going to get some more grunts.
I had no idea about the air traffic controller thing. And then I think about like something like Flight Simulator, where it's like, okay, maybe Flight Simulator is not anything like actually flying a real plane, but it really is educational as to what all goes into it. Like if you actually play Flight Simulator on, you know, simulator mode, you're really thinking about, especially this new one that Microsoft put out not that long ago, really gets into the weeds on like, here's everything that goes into takeoff, and you're taking classes at your computer basically. And again, I'm not trying to say that like, oh, I played Flight Simulator, I can fly a real plane suddenly. No, but you'll have an absolute leg up on somebody who's never touched that, you know, if you were to want to take actual, you know, plane flying classes. So very interesting with gaming as a recruitment. So going to our chat for some additional comments. SSG100 Matt says, geez, 22 years old since it was in beta. I remember seeing America's Army at Digital Life. I wouldn't have guessed it was still going on. Yeah, I thought it had faded out a few years ago, but I felt it still had an impressive run. So, you know, I mean, again, games like this usually come out, are laughed at, and fade away within a year. So the fact that this one lasted over 20 years, pretty fascinating, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with constant development. So pretty cool.
Yeah. Pretty cool. All right. Let's move on. Loki.
All right. So, of course, with all the acquisitions that Microsoft is making, everyone is kind of asking, so, you know, all these games go in the Games Pass. Isn't that going to raise the price of Games Pass? You know, it's got to happen at some point, because where's all this money going to come from that they're buying all these companies with? Well, apparently Phil Spencer was trying to kind of point out that no, they don't have plans right now to raise the price of Game Pass. So kind of addressing the rumors that it was going to go up in price. I feel like I can't prove this negative. People ask, when is the Game Pass price going to go up? They're buying all these studios. You know, it's inevitable. Even though it's been for, what, now 4 years, we haven't raised it. But it's like, you know, it's coming. When are they, when they are number one, they're going to start doing all these exclusive deals like that. You know, Xbox has history. And all I can do is make decisions that are in front of us and try to be explicit about what our goals are. So it sounds like that they're trying to at least be pretty transparent with it, that they don't have plans to raise the price of Games Pass. And I'm sure when they do, that they will let everybody know.
Yeah, they'll raise it eventually. Don't kid yourself. Or I mean, they'll absolutely raise it eventually. What I hope doesn't happen is I don't want to see them go into tears. That would be crappy. Yeah. So I really hope Microsoft doesn't go that direction. But because then you end up in the Nintendo problem. The lowest tier gets hardly any love. I mean, I guess, hooray, we got Earthbound. But, you know, what other bones are they going to throw at it over the next year?
Exactly.
So, yeah, I don't want to see Microsoft tier it. I think we should all prepare for the price to go up. And let's also be real. If you are a smart shopper, trademark, patent pending, you'll never pay full price for Game Pass. And I've talked about it here on the show, is that obviously, you know, I'm sure you all follow those gaming deals, whether it be, you know, the cheap ass gamer, Wario 64, you know, all those types of that when those cards go on sale, and they will go on sale. And I'm sure there are plenty of you, show of hands, how many of you on Black Friday or around that time will stock the fuck up on your cards for, you know, PlayStation, Microsoft and so forth for the next year? I'm sure there's people that do that for sure. I've also talked about that I use the Microsoft Rewards app, now, and I understand why people might be adverse to using that, because essentially you're allowing, you know, extra data to go to Microsoft and all this stuff, and you actually have to use Bing, which some people might fear. But I use it casually, and I would say one out of every 3 months I get comped through Microsoft Rewards. You end up getting 12,000 points and you get a free month. And so, you know, I hope they would keep things like that into place. If nothing else, you could probably get a discount. So, you know, again, if you're a choosy shopper, you'll never pay full price for these things. So, Pod Culture in chat says, I loaded up on Black Friday. Yep. Mike Def says, maybe. SGO and Hunter Matt saying, I'm glad I have Game Pass locked in for the next 2 years, that Xbox Live Gold trick. Oh, that's probably also keeping them from raising the price. These people that are still locked in that won't have to pay it. I wonder if they're going to wait another 2 years for everybody to be out of that. That would be very interesting. Fifth Dream points out, I think I have PlayStation Network for 3 more years. So again, kind of loading up maybe when it was cheap. And you know what? How far out can you load up Xbox Live? Like 3 years or something like that? I mean, if we think it's coming, maybe load up your account the next time these things go on sale. Something to think about. But I also know that's a big, you know, that's a big cost. And not maybe everybody's super into Game Pass. I don't know. But I think it's great. I love that they're building the cloud stuff into it, too. So I plan to stick with it for a little while. So, all right. DJ Rama S says, you can load up to 5 years, if I recall correctly. As shown on Matt says, 3 years. I wonder if, you know, we might be talking about conversion, that whole thing, versus how much you can actually load up. I don't know. I'd have to look into it. I'm not sure the answer, but it would be at least, I'm sure it's at least 2-3 years that you can load in advance. Something to think about if you're that worried about the price going up. Anyhow, let's talk about a new PlayStation 5 update that's coming out. Since we've been talking a lot about Microsoft, let's show a little love to Sony. After all, I think Horizon Forbidden West is this week, isn't it? That's a big deal for Sony. So I'm sure there's a lot of people that are going to be on that this week. Anyway, there will be a new system update for PlayStation. Actually, sorry. my mind derailed again, but I wanted to say, I heard the, speaking of Horizon Forbidden West, I heard it is two discs on PlayStation 4. You don't hear that one very often.
What year is this?
Well, it's because it's a 90 gig install. So.
Laughs and Call of Duty updates.
Yeah.
Right. Well.
Yeah, it's a lot, but I mean, there's two ways to look at it. There's one going, it's going to eat so much of my space. But then you also go, that means it's a fucking big game.
Yeah. Well, also, like, if it's a 90 gig install, at least they have it on disk and they're not like saying, hey, you can download that first 10, or you can, you know, download that first 10 from the disk, but you got to download the rest from the cloud. Good luck.
Yeah. I am so excited, y'all. My new internet that I'm going to have as of Saturday, no limit. No limit. Yay! I can reconnect my Xbox to automatic updates again. I'm so excited.
Yes, download all of the updates. Update all you want.
I cannot wait to download the shit out of everything. I can finally run my Steam updates that I've been backlogged for like years. It's fucking exciting, y'all. All right, anyway, yeah. Or SS2100 Matt making the classic Bomani reference going, no, no limit, no, no, no limit. All right. Anyway, SG100 Matt also used Google Foo to find out 36 months is the max you can load up Xbox Live. But interesting, Mike Def says it depends on the region because Mexico is only 2.5 years. Oh, that is interesting. It could be by region, too. All right, sorry, we derailed. I wanted to talk about this new update for PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5 that is going to be adding new accessibility and quality of life features, including voice commands. Right now, a beta is going to be made available to English-speaking users in the U.S. and U.K. That will let you say, hey, PlayStation, and sorry if I woke yours up, but I don't think this beta is actually out yet, but it will be soon. You can turn this feature off, just like all the other home assistants, if you want, and then you can use your voice to launch games, whatever apps, open the system menu, control media playback, and so on and so on. I have to say, I never saw myself really using a lot of the voice commands, but I have found it awfully convenient for the bedroom TV, which has a Google Chromecast on it, to say, hey, blah, 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 you know the word, smart assistant, turn on my television and launch Twitch. And it's nice to just have it all come up there while I'm, brushing my teeth and other stuff. And then I can crawl into bed and watch Twitch before I drift off. So it's just kind of neat. So they're building the same thing into PlayStation. Why not? There's a lot of media and stuff on PlayStation. And if you want to launch games that way, sure, why not? Also, group chats will now be known as parties. And you can decide if you want them to be private or public parties. So there's that. If you leave a party public and open, your friends can join. Their friends can join. So it definitely will be a party. Also, you'll now be able to filter games by genre and have 5 of them on the console's home screen for quick access. Apparently, trophy cards are going to be redesigned on PS5, and there will be more screen reader languages, which is great for accessibility, and some other changes as well. You can opt in to the beta test if you want over at PlayStation.com, but get on that. Wednesday is when they're going to send out the emails on if you got in or not. But that's pretty exciting. So, let's see. Fifth Dream in chat says, that was always a good idea, but usually muscle memory and clicking buttons to launch games and whatever, it's just quicker. Yes and no. I do agree with you, but sometimes they change the interface. And PlayStation is done, at least on PlayStation 4, because like you have to launch everything through the TV and video app when it comes to stuff like Twitch and stuff. Like, things move around. So it is, and like it starts, it's not as fast as it used to be. So like I have to launch it and wait for the icons to show up so I can see where Twitch is today or if it got rearranged or whatever. At least that's been my experience. It's just easier to tell my, a home assistant by Google to, sorry, I'm really trying to not launch all of your assistants. I have to remember that in this day and age.
You could call it gurgle.
Yeah, sure. So I can say gurgle, do this thing, and yeah, it's just easier, I think. You adapt the muscle memory, I guess. All right, up next. Oh, it's this headline again. Sorry, we always like to hear this person in the news because it makes for a funny headline, right, Dark Sakura?
Yeah. So Bowser has a 40-month stint to do in prison. Yeah. but not the Bowser you're thinking. Unless you are thinking of the hacker Gary Bowser. So he was the person that had the Switch hacking group team executor. And so, of course, he's not Doug Bowser, just saying. No, even though they got their names mixed up in the original version of the article. Oops. But he was part of a collective that sold devices that you could use to play pirated games on your Switch. The FBI arrested him in 2020, and he agreed to pay $10 million to Nintendo for a civil privacy lawsuit, and then another $4.5 million for restitution. But the sentencing today, not today, but when they were doing the sentencing, he was facing up to 10 years in prison. And also because video game publishers apparently have lost more than $65 million thanks to what team executor did, they were wanting to go for that. Instead, he got 40 months. So that's still, you know, a big chunk out of his life. And they're still looking to find his accomplices. So that's really about all we know now. But yeah, he's being sentenced to assisted.
Well, in 40 months, maybe, is when they'll release Super Mario Odyssey 2, because Bowser will get out of prison and kidnap the princess yet again. Dar Tetsuya in chat says, I know everyone is taking up pitchforks against Nintendo, but I heard this guy had malicious code in his mods. I don't know if I can feel too sorry if that's the case. I don't know if I'd believe everything I read on the internet, but at the same time, I also don't understand the pitchforks against Nintendo for this. I mean, this guy was pretty cocky from what I understand. Like,
yeah.
Nintendo had slapped this guy down a couple times before, and he was kind of continuing his stuff, thinking he was invincible. So it kind of sounds like he got what was coming to him. Like, from
exactly.
What I'm picking up.
And the thing is, it's one thing that if they're, you know, giving something away for free, you know?
Right.
But the fact that he was making money off of someone else's work, pretty much, you know, or as an exploit to get around somebody else's work. I mean, I'll be honest. I had like, you know, an R4 back in the day and all of those. Yeah. But at the end, you know, those for active systems, those are things that are taking, you know, money from the developers, from the people who are making the games. And at this, like, if it was, you know, say, oh, we've put out this, you know, the EverDrive, you know, for SNES. That's one thing. It's an old system. They're not really making any money on, you know, obscure, you know, right. Import games, unless they're going to put them out, you know, on the eShop or something.
Right.
So that's one thing. But for a modern, active, consistently updated and having released games for system, that's many hyphens in that phrase, by the way. it makes perfect sense. Then to go around and be, oh, he can't do shit to me. And I'm like, no, do shit to him, please.
Yeah.
Do lots of shit to him.
And don't get me wrong, I'm all for, you know, homebrew on consoles and, you know, unlocks to do that. And I realize it can be a slippery slope with piracy, and I don't think we should be pirating games. I think we should, you know, support where we can, the developers and so forth. But I'm all for homebrew and things that open that up. But when you're being very flagrant that you're doing it for piracy, which I kind of get the sense this guy was, then it's kind of one of those, why are we all acting shocked that Nintendo did this? I don't think, you know, we Nintendo is known for being very aggressive to protect its shit. But usually they're not going to try to send you to jail. They might shut you down like that YouTuber a few weeks ago, but they're not going to go after that person to jail because they weren't like trying to flagrantly make money off Nintendo and pirate games and things of that sort. And I think that's where this, you know, bad Bowser went wrong, to be honest. Only Sonic in chat says, yeah, modded my Wii too just a few years ago. Yeah, I modded mine. And I'll also say it's the one time I did advocate for piracy because I did it to play a game that Nintendo refused to release here.
Was it the SingStar ABBA?
I did end up doing that, but it was the Xenoblade.
I remember that's when Tiara was visiting and we came over.
It was Xenoblade did it. And then they ended up doing the GameStop exclusive agreement, which I still thought was shit. So I think in those circumstances, I think it's a little more justified. But I mean, like, again, if I can walk into a Target or other similar store, you know, and pick up the item off the shelf, I'm probably going to 99.9 times out of 100. That's what I'll do. But in those extreme cases where, you know what, there's a game I want to play and the company refuses to release it in the US, I don't feel bad about piracy whatsoever. In fact, I would encourage people to pirate Mother 3.
Why shouldn't you? I have a cartridge. Yeah, I have a translated cartridge.
So, but I will say, to company's credit, even past where we were at with the Nintendo Wii so many years ago, I feel like companies are finally realizing we live in a global sort of environment and we see more stuff get released here. I think Taiko no Tatsujin is a great example. We're seeing a lot of those games ending up releasing here when, you know, we all remember a time when those were very nuanced, you know, Japanese releases only that never saw the light of day over here. And now we're seeing them because I think these companies realize, oh, yes, we live in a global economy. So Mike Def says SingStar ABBA was PS3. There was a comparable one on the Wii. It was just Dance, maybe.
Yeah, it was just Dance.
There was a comparable ABBA game on Wii. So
yeah, I think it was.
No, it wasn't Dance. It was like Let's Dance ABBA or something like that.
Oh yeah, it was even worse. Let's like sing. A knockoff something.
Oh, like We Sing ABBA.
Yeah.
Yeah, We Sing ABBA.
Orange Wright says, I would have never guessed Taiko would be a worldwide release game that would get announced on Nintendo Directs back in the 2000s. Exactly. So things are getting better in that regard. So that's why you don't hear me. Like, you know, this show's been on for 20 years, so you could probably go back and find Rob Roberts advocating piracy in certain scenarios. But these days, the reasons to do it are not, you know, the games are available for you to pay for them and pay the developers for their work, and I think that's what you should do. In the case of Mother 3, that is not an option for us, so steal away.
In this case, it's a political protest.
In a way.
Yeah. You are protesting the fact that this game has a high demand in the U.S. And they aren't releasing it, so we're taking matters into our own hands. Yep. The end of story.
I will be happy to pay for it once it's made available to me.
Indeed. Same. Absolute same.
All right. Yeah, as 200 Matt says, I mean, we all modded our PlayStation 1s to play DDR titles. Well, I would argue that Konami is one of the worst defenders in this. And this is why I think that it's actually, you bring that up. I think that's very relevant to the history of our show. Let's really send off Studio N7 tonight and take a look back at the 20-year history of the show. In the early years of the show, the only way we could play DDR was to either pay excruciatingly high import fees for games or to mod or to steal them, essentially. And I'm sorry, not sorry. We stole them because that was the only reasonable way to play them. But you know what? Every time they released a mix here, even if it was subpar, when DDR, the original one, came out on PlayStation, the US version, bought it. Konomics, which I think turned like 22 years old this week. I saw a tweet or something like that. Konomics, when that came out, bought it. And all the other stuff, bought those as well. So, you know, I would support it when it finally would show up here. And as Joan Hunter Matt points out, I remember it was a big deal when the DS was region free. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Orange Wright says, I even bought Beatmania US. Hey, that controller.
Same.
But the controller was better. Remember?
How many times did we shave our 2DX Japanese controller buttons? And they think that, you know, mine actually had the little pad mods underneath them.
Mm-hmm.
But then they constructed the new ones, I think, with something very similar to those mods.
I heard there were some Japanese players that imported our version for that reason, to get that controller. Yeah.
Yep. So. I have a couple of friends, actually, who were like, hey, can you send me a controller? And I'd be like, I'll see where I can find them. If I find them, oh, well, we just had someone so import them for us. Sorry about it. I'm like, okay, well, I didn't buy it, so fine.
I still
have mine.
They just turned up in the garage, our old controllers for that. So
I have
funny.
I actually need to find my copy of Para Para because I have my biscuits and I don't have my game.
Oh,
so,
wow.
And I wanted to bust it out and play it the other day. I actually was planning on hooking up a 2DX fourth style.
Ugh,
so I could get, no, what, no, it was third style that had the right version of the Safari.
Oh yeah, the slower one, yeah.
The right version of the Safari, not the crappy speedy one.
All right.
Anyway.
Let's move on. Too far down memory lane, but good times. Let's move on, Loki.
Yeah, so, you know, we've talked about how Battlefield 2042 is kind of bad. And because of that, there is a change.org petition asking Electronic Arts to offer refunds on all platforms for their players. And they already have more than 150,000 people that have signed that petition because it is pretty bad. And they're losing players every day. So we'll see if that ends up happening. The thing to note, though, is even though they have 150,000 signatures, other campaigns have gotten a lot more signatures, like, for example, making Shaggy DLC in Mortal Kombat 11, 381,000 signatures. So we'll see.
Pardon my ignorance on this, but we all know I don't usually play these type of games. So what's wrong with the game, Loki? Can you translate to gay for me?
Yes, I will translate. So it is a very rushed and buggy put together game. For example, some of the complaints that they have in there, there's balancing issues with the vehicles in the game. Hovercrafts are like way too OP. You can drive up the side of buildings with those. You can constantly respawn them.
By the Mako from Mass Effect?
The very basics like of gunplay are just broken. Like you can literally empty a full clip into somebody and it doesn't register a hit against them. Like, jeez. Just ridiculously stupid things like that.
Wow.
So it's very much broken.
All right. Thank you for translating. It sounds like a hot mess.
It is a hot mess.
All right. Also a hot mess. Countries that don't support equal rights for all LGBTQ people, and we're seeing that play out with a Sims 4 wedding expansion, and this expansion is not going to release in Russia because of federal laws over there that will not allow it to release. There was a law passed in 2013 that some folks outside of Russia sometimes call it the Russia Gay Propaganda Law. So basically, Maxis, in a blog post called Our Commitment to You, A Letter to Our Players from the Sims Team, mentions that because there is a wedding-themed storyline involving a same-sex marriage between two characters, it's, quote, not something we could freely share around the world. And so the team wanted to, quote, explain the decision that we've made not to release this pack in Russia. And it basically came down to the fact that the team could either tell this story or they could and avoid the Russian market, or they could change the content to meet those sorts of federal laws. And they've decided to say, we'll just choose not to release it there at all. So this would be, and I know we have listeners over there, so this would be this is one of those great opportunities where you could just pirate it and play it anyway. In this case, it sucks because we should support the developers. But also, it's funny because Dark Sakura talked about sometimes piracy being a political protest. And I feel in this particular case, it really is, right? So, very interesting. So, but hey, props to Maxis. Because, you know, other companies would have just said, okay, we'll change the gender of the character. Which they could have easily done. But they didn't do it. So, that's great. Dark Tetsuya says, I remember that being a whole thing back around the time of the Winter Olympics back then. Yeah. So, all right, let's go back to a simpler time, shall we? And revisit this segment that we love to do on our show.
Now it's time to travel back to a simpler time, where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the classic game of the week.
And what did you pick for us this week, Dark Sakura?
Jockey Crush. As I say in the intro of it, Jockey Crush. It is, well, you remember Extifer playing all the Alien Crush he could possibly play?
Yeah, he really loved that.
At your guys' old place?
Yeah, that was on Wii Virtual Console, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jockey Crush is the third in that whole series. So, of course, the the first one being Alien Crush and then Devil's Crush. Well, actually, Dragon's Revenge is also, I guess, would sort of be the third one that came out. That was the Genesis one that wasn't as great as the others. But Jockey Crush is continuing with that sort of otherworldly theme in the fact that it's an ogre-themed... Jockey is a type of Japanese demon. But it's another pinball game, virtual pinball game. And this one came out on the Super Famicom and never came out in the U.S. And it's an excellent game if you like, you know, virtual pinball. One of the great things about this one is that it has a lot more in common with Devil's Crush in the fact that it has these six hidden stages. And you also have alternating two-player play, different options where you can have different control configurations, your ball physics, things like that, you know, different speed settings. You also have, you know, different tiers, like I was saying in your levels. The third level has, like, moving targets and different lanes that lead you back to the second level. You know, all kinds of ways that you can get around through there. It's really a very beautiful game as well. It is a little on the dark side, but dark and vivid, if that makes sense. And in fact, it's actually even considered, you know, an equal to any of the others in the series, you know, even slightly crisper in terms of its design and color scheme. But Jockey Crush came out in 1992, again, for the Super Famicom, put out by Naxxessoft, and it's, again, in the whole Crush series. It also, you know, I'd have to say that if you've got a way to play this game and you have not, I would actually do it. Yeah, this is actually the official third game, because that Genesis one that came out, I don't really think it was actually part of the series, like an official part of the series, more like a spiritual successor type game. But I also, you know, it's got a like story to it and everything about, like, you know, the magical pinball from hell or something. And the sad thing about it is that while there are a lot of enthusiasts who do recall Alien Crush and Devil's Crush, they don't know about Jockey Crush because it didn't come out over here. I know I've mentioned it on the show before. Fifth Dream was talking about Demon's Tilt, and Demon's Tilt is an absolute spiritual successor to the series. I've actually streamed a decent bit of this game as well. Jockey Crush, in fact, I might actually just bust this out later this week and show it off, maybe on my Wednesday night stream, but it's really worth playing. And of course, also developed by Compile. And Compile has given us one of the other best games in the universe, The Guardian Legend.
Yay.
So, and on top of that, too, the music is really good.
Yeah, I noticed that, too. The music in this is great.
Oh, yeah. The music in this game, it just really sets the entire tone for it. And on top of that, you know, there's, it's like this one stage on the table where it's sort of like this sort of purple, rocky side. And it's got this, the Jucky in the center of it, you know, in red and white. And it almost makes me think that it's like in this sort of abyss, where everything else just has that sort of red outlined, and it honestly feels like there's some true depth in the game, even though it's two-dimensional. So I have absolutely been enamored with this game. I wouldn't mind owning an original of it, and I've played it, you know, quite a few times. I really enjoy it. But I just think that there's like a sort of crispness to this one that is missing from quite a few other pinball tables. And in fact, the one on stream right now is always the mode that I called Space Invader mode, sort of. But I think that there are so many different variances in gameplay between the multiple stages that you have enough to keep you interested in it. It's got a good enough challenge to it that the replayability is absolutely there.
Okay. sorry to the podcast listeners, but this mode that we're looking at on Twitch right now, this is creepy as fuck.
Yeah, it has sort of like this, almost like...
Kind of reminds me of Miss Nude World.
The face in the background is sort of like, almost like a type of no mask, I think. You also have like these little spheres that are coming out, almost like little scarabs, what it looks like. And then you're it's sort of Arkanoid style, except you've got your paddles. And so you're shooting the little demon ball around and trying to destroy them all. And then you have to, the eyes on the background start blinking in red, and you have to shoot the ball into one of those eyeballs. And as you go through it, the face changes more and more to the style of a Hanya mask. If you don't know what that is, go look it up. Where it gets more and more demonic, as you know, well, I'd say more like, you know, traditional ogre style masks, like I said, like a Hanya. And it's really well detailed and absolutely gorgeous. The shading, I mean, it's for pixel art, it's good artwork, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
See, and like in the level it's on now, like the face is getting more orange, and it definitely looks a lot more like the traditional Hanya. So I absolutely love this game, especially, you know, bringing in the mythos of this particular one. I absolutely love it. So I will talk about the others in the series just a little bit, because I think I have talked about Alien Crush before and Devil's Crush. I think I've done them both as a classic game. The other game that I mentioned is Dragon's Revenge, which is sort of like a Genesis answer. It's not really as good. The ball physics are not great. I mean, it's an amusing play, I'll put it that way, but it isn't great. But there was a WiiWare release, updated version of Alien Crush called Alien Crush Returns. And it was pretty neat. I mean, I'll probably talk about that as a classic game later. But, you know, this is just one in the series. I mean, every game that's in the official Crush series is absolutely worth playing. And then if you want the modern take on it, like I was saying earlier, there is a Demon's Tilt on Steam. It is also available on Mac on Steam. Absolutely, absolutely a good way to satisfy that that old Crush pinball craving, if you get it. So that's what I'm going to throw in there. Jackie Crush, if you get a chance to play it, absolutely do. And if you do play it, let me know, because I want to know what you think of it. It's one of my favorite virtual pinball games.
Great. There it is, your classic game of the week, Jackie Crush. And I got to say, you know, I'm kind of with the chat. Like, I knew, of course, about Aliens Crush and Devil's Crush. Like, those are very hard games to miss, especially if you followed the TurboGrafx-16 at all. And I'm sure, I feel like you've probably mentioned this in passing, because I just know you love this series. But I've not really sit down and watched it and listened to it before, and it's pretty cool. Like, I wonder how this one kind of got lost. I guess maybe it came out later in the Super Nintendo's life or something. I don't know.
It was 92.
Ah, yeah, weird. I just feel like,
but it didn't come out in the U.S.
radar compared to the others.
I mean, if you think about it this way, it's a pinball game, number one, which is a little bit more obvious, you know, genre for a video game.
True.
And it didn't see the light of day outside of Japan. Back in, you know, those days, it was much harder to get those imports. And then, of course, by the time importing became the big thing that it is. Like, I didn't buy my first import game until, like, 95.
Yeah.
I take that back. 94. My first import game that I bought was the Sailor Moon S fighting game. Which actually now Gwen has it, I think. I think I sold it to Gwen. but going back to it, I mean, importing was like when I imported my Sailor Moon game, I did it by literal magazine mail order. COD.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, it was a different world than for you know, importing, and we didn't have, you know, emulators, at least that were as sophisticated as this. In fact, I didn't think I actually even had my first emulated game until maybe the late 90s, late 90s. So, I mean, this game came out when I was in 10th grade. It was that long ago. But it's, I know that I have certain games that are, I'm like, oh yeah, play it, it's fun. And some that I'm really like, you gotta play. I say if you like the first two Crush games, you absolutely owe it to yourself to play this one because it is an excellent game. It's a wonderful addition to the series, and I honestly would love for them to put out like a Crush compilation that has that kind of like the Monster Boy treatment, remember? Where you can switch back and forth between the old mode and like a new updated mode. And I think that would sell. I would buy it.
Or where you could play the Switch vertically. I always thought that was really cool for the pinball simulators to do that.
So. Yeah, well, I mean, the WonderSwan and WonderSwan Color back in the day was set to be played vertical or horizontally because a couple of the Klonoa games worked that way. Mm. And you know, they could easily do that with the Switch, but when?
All right.
Missed opportunities.
All right, there it is, your classic game of the week. Great pick. Very educational for the folks tonight, especially if you like pinball fan or if you like pinball at all or like pinball-inspired games, you know, of which there's been a few through the years, you know. Even things like Pinball Quest, or I think of, like, you know, the translations like Pinbot and High Speed that were so weird on the NES because they did shit that you can't actually do physically.
And they had music.
Yeah.
The originals really didn't have anything like that. I thought that someone did a ROM hack of Pinbot to turn it into Jackbot. I'd have to take a look that. But the thing with these that are like this in particular, and this is where my point is going on this, is that these were made solely. They're not a translation. They're not a recreation like, you know, PinMame or Pinball FX or something like that. These are virtual pinball that is meant to be played in that kind of environment. It's built for a console. And so you get an experience on a table like that that you cannot get at all unless you have, like, again, one of those, you know, PinMame cabinets. Mm-hmm. That has, you know, that a game would be programmed for something like that. The closest we even have to, I mean, that would work. Something like that would work if you had where it would just move the tables back and forth, you know, on a virtual screen. Something like that would work. But you also then miss feeling the ball, I guess, and being able to control your tilts and whatnot. But that's actually one thing I have to go back and say about Demon's Tilt is that it actually does have a pretty decent tilt function in it. So... but I could go on about this all day, but that's the thing that makes these games special is that they were programmed this way. This is their intent, and they're so unique in that it's you can be a fan of pinball, you could be a fan of puzzle games. I'd put it that way too. And this game is definitely a test of your hand-eye coordination, and it's challenging in a way that conventional pinball isn't.
Well, I don't know if you'd want to play this table in real life. Those demon faces are scary as fuck. I'd run out of the building screaming.
I don't know. I don't think they're that scary. But maybe if it was like bleeding all over the place. And
yeah, maybe. All right. Great pick. Let's get into some other news. Rapid fire style with some rapid fire news. Loki.
To go along with the announcement and release of Earthbound on the SNES Nintendo Online service, you can actually download the Nintendo Strategy Guide, the official strategy guide for the game, for free. That's right. It's available on Nintendo's Japanese website under their manuals for Earthbound. And thankfully, though, the strategy guide is in English, the player's guide. But you can check it out. It's a pretty awesome strategy guide. I remember getting a bunch of those back in the day when you know they were putting them out for different games. So let's check that out. And then we have some more announcements for TMNT Shredder's Revenge. So there's a new playable character with Splinter joining the roster, along with April O'Neil, who was previously announced. So that game looks pretty awesome, and it's supposed to be coming out later this year. Can't wait to check it out.
Dark Tetsuya and Mike Deft in our chat room both talking about the Earthbound strategy guide being a part of the Wii U release as well. I'd forgotten about that.
Really? I did download that PDF like right away.
Yeah. That's still neat, you know, nice little blast in the past. I remember there was
one
for
Final
Fantasy,
it's just nice to have. Yeah. So.
Let's move on.
Well, Shaquille O'Neal and Arcade 1UP is doing an NBA Jam Shaq Edition arcade machine. So just in case we haven't had enough Shaq going on back in the day, we have some new Shaq. They had an announcement at Shaq's Fun House, which is a concert experience in LA this weekend. Actually, they made the announcement on Friday. But he is going to be doing the going to be playing the NBA Jam on that custom 1UP. And so it will be a 65.8 inches high, which is taller than their existing NBA Jam, with a 19-inch screen, Wi-Fi enabled, and three playable games, just NBA Jam, NBA Jam Tournament Edition, and NBA Hang Time. And of course, he was in the original NBA Jam with the Orlando Magic. Moving on, Cloud from Final Fantasy VII will be available in Chocobo Grand Prix in their first season pass, and have a 800 mithril login bonus. Oh my gosh, his model is so freaking cute.
So chibi.
Like, how can you be an adorable chibi and still look that constipated? Seriously. But anyway, he is a season pass exclusive. So if you were playing that, go for it.
I just don't like that I'm hearing about 800 mithril season pass. And I'm like, oh God, how much, you know, games as a service crap are they loading into this? Because I was really looking forward to this, but I'm not looking forward to all these microtransactions.
Is it a free-to-play game?
Oh, is it? Oh, I didn't know. I just assumed it was a purchase game. If it's free-to-play, then I guess it's a little less annoying.
I like it having options like the free-to-play MMOs, but if you pay the subscription, then you get a few bells and whistles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something like that is perfectly acceptable.
No. All right, let us travel around the world and check out some games that are coming out probably sooner than Chocobo GP, because they're coming out this week, and we'll start in the U.S.
To clarify, apparently Chocobo Grand Prix is going to be on the Switch as a full game, or they're going to have a free-to-play version. So we'll see how that kind of shapes up.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah, interesting. So, neat. Anyways, so for U.S. release dates, we've got River City Girls Zero on Nintendo Switch.
Yay.
Dynasty Warriors 9 Empires on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. Star Wars The Old Republic Legacy of the Sith on PC. Assassin's Creed The Ezio Collection on Nintendo Switch.
You mean Ezio?
Ezio, tomato, tomato, who cares? Getsu Fuma Den, Undying Moon on PC. King of Fighters 15 on PC, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, and Xbox Series. Token Rambu Warriors on PC and Nintendo Switch. Total War Warhammer 3 on PC, Mac, and Linux. And see, Voice of Cards, The Forsaken Maiden. I almost read that as The Forsaken Madden. That's on PC, Nintendo Switch, and PlayStation 4. And last but not least, Horizon Forbidden West on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5. That's it.
All right. Going over to Japan and looking at the releases there on the Nintendo Switch this week, that same Token Ranbu Muso Warriors is out in Japan this week, as is Assassin's Creed. The Ezio Collection is also out. And a game called The Table Game Deluxe Pack is also out on the Switch in Japan. And looking at it, it's kind of just your generic board game collection, but, you know, things are also a little more regionalized to Japan and not just Americanized stuff that you would see in a game like Clubhouse Games or something like that. Hopping over to the PlayStation 5, King of Fighters 15 is out on the PlayStation 5 this week, and Japan also gets Horizon Forbidden West on the 18th in regular, regalia, special, collectors, all those different types of special editions. So pick how much you want to spend on the game with all the extra stuff in it. And that is your Japanese release dates. How about the UK, Dark Sakura?
On the 17th, we have King of Fighters 15 for PlayStation and Xbox. We have, I think, for PC, Total War Warhammer 3 Day 1 Edition. On Switch, we have Assassin's Creed Ezio Collection, also on the 17th. And then on the 18th, we have Horizon Forbidden West on PlayStation. And that is it.
We have a lot of common threads all throughout the world this week. So, busy week. All right. Yeah. Let's get into some more stories, and then we'll be taking your questions and your calls. I know the live turnout is a little lighter tonight. Can't imagine why, but we'll get to those that want to participate further with the show and our listener roundtable in a little bit. But first, Loki.
Could Take-Two be working on a new Midnight Club game? Some people like to think so, because the developer Visual Concepts, who has worked on the NBA 2K and WWE 2K series, they are recruiting for an open-world driving game. And immediately everyone thinks Midnight Club because, you know, Rockstar has that and stuff. Or it could be a new IP. We don't know. But there is a new driving game coming from Take-Two. So we'll just have to see what it is at some point. Will it be Midnight Club? Who knows?
How would you feel about a new Midnight Club?
If it's not Rockstar working on it, I'm kind of disappointed with that. But... Mm-hmm. Meh, whatever. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. So I don't want to see some video, see it in motion, see what it looks like. All right.
Yeah, definitely.
Dark Sakura.
So there is a series that I would probably say a lot of people who are into import games, especially dating sims, know very well. Tokimeki Memorial, which is Konami's big dating sim. It was the big one that everyone knew about. So there is an independent, retro game translator known as Retro Translator that, has, his team working, their team working on translating, one of the Tokimeki Memorial games into English, and it's almost complete, but here is the thing. It is not, Tokimeki Memorial Forever With Me, which is like the PlayStation 1, the one that everybody likes. It was the one that was like the best improved of them. It's the SNES one or the Super Famicom one, which is Tokimeki Memorial Densetsu no Ki no Shita De, which translates to Heartthrob Memorial Under the Tree of Legends. You know, I actually have the Tokimeki Memorial OAV on Laserdisc. but this is the big game, I think, that brought dating sims to the fore. Like, I mean, they were already kind of big in Japan. It's not Forever With Me, it's Forever With You. Mm-hmm. It was actually the upgraded version from the PC Engine Super CD-ROM one, TurboGrafx CD. The SNES one came out after the PlayStation one, and it didn't have any voice acting, of course, because it was the SNES, and it was just, like, really watered down. So this is a Tokimemo that is just really not the one that everyone wanted. Of course, you know, I think it would be easier to do a translated copy of the SNES one, which, for the record, several already exist. Just mm-hmm. saying. Mm-hmm. On top of that, too, you know, some other people are like, well, why not do Tokimemo Pocket? You know, the one of the, you know, a handheld one to bring with it. But at the same time, you know, it is what it is. If for some people, this is going to be the way that people start off with Tokimemo. I personally would like to see a translation, an official release of Tokimemo Girl Side, where basically you play one of the female characters dating the boys, you know, which I thought it was pretty cool that, you know, in all of the world of boy date girl, you know, dating sim thing they did in the Tokimemo series, they did one where the girls can go after the boys. I mean, and now, of course, we have a slew of, you know, various different options for dating sims, including the very popular Boyfriend Dungeon and Dream Daddy and the Colonel Sanders game, which I still need to play. blink, blink. But I think I'm glad it's being done. I'm not trying to poo-poo on the attempt. It's just there's better Tokimemo games to do. The PlayStation 1 would have been absolutely astounding to have. Just even the Japanese voice acting is fine, you know, but have it translated into English, you get an authentic experience, but in dialogue that, you know, that a Westerner can understand.
I'm sure also just, I think you kind of addressed it, just the tools kind of being easier and a little more accessible for the Super Nintendo probably made it the one that was just like the easier one to translate maybe. So, but hey, making the game available for more people to try out. But like you said, I guess translations already exist. So, but.
Well, there are a few other fan translations that are coming out sort of a quote officially. One of them is there was a Japanese exclusive Yakuza game that came out on PSP that's called Yakuza Black Panther in English, or Kurohyo Ryuga. I'm going to mispronounce this. Gotoku Shinso, which Yakuza Black Panther. And then another game called Mizurna Falls. So it's a PS1 game that. Where you can pet a dog, apparently, that's getting a fan translation, too. I also thought it was very interesting that there's a fan translation out for the Biohazard 1.5. Almost a fully playable version. Huh. So,
pretty cool what a lot of, like, you know, modders and translators are doing to make more of these games playable by more people around the world. Pretty cool.
The power of boredom and wanting to play a game.
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, while these folks work on new technologies and new things that are great for games, we have other big companies doing the exact opposite, right, Loki?
Yes, it's your weekly disappointment in the game industry, your depression, if you will, of the future that is coming, the unwanted NFT future that Ubisoft is just running full speed ahead into a wall with. So apparently, one of the things that Ubisoft is doing is they're collaborating with The Sandbox, which is a game, if you will, that's more of like a virtual space that you can buy real estate in and walk around with avatar. It basically looks like PlayStation Home if they monetized the crap out of it and made it blockchain and made it stupid. So that's kind of what that is. And of course, Ubisoft's like, yep, sign me up for that. So they've brought the rabbits to it. Because everybody needs that. And then, of course, you know, Ubisoft employees are still telling their, you know, higher-ups that NFTs suck and that they really shouldn't be in that business. You know, there's some fun comments from the Ubisoft employees, like, are we competing with EA for the most hated game studio by the public?
I saw that one.
Because this is how you do it. I think the kids call this entire comment session being ratioed. You know what else makes a lot of money? Making fun, spectacular, groundbreaking blockbusters. Why don't we focus on that instead? You know what else is great in the company? Not sexually harassing your employees. But hey, you know, Ubisoft gonna Ubisoft, so what can you do? They just play by some different rules, that's all. You know, if they could mint sexual harassment into the blockchain, I'm sure they would try to do that as well.
As shown, Hunter Matt in chat says, I love that Ubisoft's internal employee forum was filled of employees dunking on the company's stance on NFTs. Hey, that's why. And, you know, shout out to those frontline employees at Ubisoft that are fighting the good fight on the inside, because, you know, we've said this time and time again, these stupid decisions are never the fault of the hardworking, you know, frontline creators of these games. It's always some dumb fuck executive who shouldn't even be in this business who's making these calls. And it's very apparently clear with what you see with what's going on at Ubisoft. And good on them for ratioing these stupid things that people don't want. Anyway.
And then, of course, a little bit more details regarding the whole Team 17 Worms NFT announcement thing that we kind of talked about, I think, last week, talking about how basically the employees had no idea that this was even happening aside from the higher-ups. You know, and the QA developers, of course, at Team 17 are really not paid very well, between $20,000 and $25,000 annually. And while
Jeez,
they're
is that it?
Yeah, and so while they're struggling to pay bills, you know, there is people that they're going out there and trying to make a few extra bucks off of some of their assets from the company. So obviously, that's not a good look.
Mm-mm.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hope these Ubisoft executives get put in their place real soon and stop driving the company in this direction, or they're going to just drive them right out of business. For our last official story tonight, I thought this was a fun one to go out on. The fact that MAME, known as the Multiple Arcade Machine Emulator, is what MAME stands for, just turned 25 years old, believe it or not. Its debut was the February 5th of 1997. If you've never heard of MAME, that's kind of surprising. It's an emulator that runs all sorts of old arcade emulation and a lot of stuff them throughout the years. I remember, I mean, I'm dating myself, obviously, but whatever. I remember being around when MAME kind of first came out, and it was a lot of the really old, like, Namco boards and Atari boards where they first started. But then, obviously, you know, MAME started to get into, you know, newer and newer stuff. And when they started getting stuff like Street Fighter II and Mortal Kombat, and then, you know, even beyond that, it really became its own thing. And, of course,
I wish that they could still do the Hikaru software. That would have been amazing.
Of course, MAME does state on the official MAME website, their purpose is to preserve decades of software history, and MAME prevents important vintage software from being lost and forgotten, achieved by documenting the hardware and how it functions. The source code to MAME serves as this documentation. So, you know, a lot of people might jump to, oh, these bad things, you know, MAME leads to piracy and all that. But, you know, again, there's a lot of rights and a lot of things that get lost out there throughout the years.
Also,
where we
some
would never
games
have
are just
them.
Not available. I mean, like, exactly. Where are you going to find, like, it's like if you want a certain type. I mean, granted, they have, you know, Arcade 1-Up for a lot of things, but there's a lot of games that are very obscure out there that good luck finding hardware for that.
And some old creators in the 80s made public domained their ROMs, basically, who had the rights and license to do so, and were like, yeah, MAME's pretty cool, and so you can distribute this however much you want. So there is a set. I don't know how many games are technically public domain, but there's a set of, you know, at least 10 games, probably more at this point. It's been a while since I've looked, that are absolutely free to get MAME and use them and have fun with it and experience some old arcade games. And then what also was interesting about this, the 2021 release Capcom Arcade Stadium, which is relatively, I have that on the Switch. Apparently it was using code from MAME in it. So not a huge surprise, I'm sure. Interesting how that's come full circle.
The surprise was they actually credited them, which is nice.
Yeah,
that is true. Yeah, that is nice. So,
but also, apart from just being a nice gesture, it also does sort of cover their tail legally.
Right. Because I remember, I feel like there was something that didn't do that, and it became this
whole
big issue.
Yep, it was OBS.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I thought there was
and
something
Streamlabs
involving...
OBS.
Yes, but I thought there was something involving MAME, too. But yeah, that was a kind of an adjacent issue, for sure.
Yeah. It's the same thing. You know, if they had... They weren't supposed to use OBS in the name, or they were supposed to credit or something, and none of that happened.
Dar Tetsuya is talking about the public domain games, talking about Robbie Roto off the top of my head, but there's a few others. Yeah, I think that's the one. They released that on, like, the phone stores. And it was a full running copy of MAME that you were able to load it basically on your devices and play games that way. That's how I have on my iPad, my old ass iPad at this point, a version of MAME basically is from that being available for like a week. But Orange Wright says MAME preserves so many games that we would have never heard of. Absolutely. Dartusia says Capcom Arcade Stadium has its issues, but I do fire it up now and then for some classic arcade fun. Yeah, it's like everything else I've talked about. When they do like legal versions, especially when they, you know, enhance it a little bit, which, you know, Capcom Arcade Stadium has like the achievements, the online leaderboards, you know, they some different graphical ways of looking at it. They tried to sweeten the pot a little bit. I supported it because I like retro gaming. It's fun. And I like when the companies dip into their back catalogs. I wish there would be another Midway Arcade Treasures collections. There's some really good stuff in there, but we haven't seen those releases in a very long time. So
holy crap. Ivan Reitman died.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, wow. I just saw the posting about it from Associated Press. It's like just now.
Huh.
Well, I didn't mean to derail everything with it, but yeah, wow.
No, that's fine. Wow. All right.
Okay. Time to watch Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Gosh. Okay. Moving on. Let's get to our listener roundtable. We invite your emails at participate@orangeloungeradio.com. And I think I saw one come in.
We do have one.
So let's get to it. Let's get to our emails first.
So it's one email. And you'll know who it is.
Email singular.
And you'll know who it is the moment I start reading it. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Hello, LR.
Hi, YYR.
It's been a while, but I've been listening to the podcast for just about this whole time. Congratulations, Rob, to you and Alan on the new place. I'm looking forward to seeing the new studio, smiley face. You. Rob, you are right. Wii U did, in fact, release in November of 2012 when it launched with a really, really fun tech demo, a 2D Mario game, and a bunch of third-party games that would most likely already played on other platforms. I would argue that the unexciting launch lineup and the many long stretches between big game releases did as much to hurt the Wii U as its awful name. I kept defending that name, you know that? And I still kind of defend it. Despite this, I do still actively have mine hooked up, primarily for, don't laugh at me, Wii Fit U. That name is funny. What? I'm just saying.
No, I wouldn't laugh at that either. I mean, it was a great fitness title. Yeah, I know. I know a lot of people have kind of graduated, for lack of a better term, to Ring Fit, but I also know it's a different, like Ring Fit and Wii Fit U are very different games. So, no, I don't fault you. I'm not going to laugh at you for keeping that hooked up.
And I have a hard time believing that Switch Sports will top Wii Sports Club, but I guess we'll see soon enough. I was delighted that Wolfenstein 3D was mentioned during the Classic Game of the Week segment recently. I was also happy to hear that both the Mac version and the modding community were mentioned. You probably already know this if you watched my YYR Games 10th Anniversary Retrospective videos, but only a handful of people did. So I'll tell you that I was a member of Wolf Addict Software, the largest modding group for the Mac version during the mid to late 1990s. We actually sold several scenarios created by our members, including new levels, graphics, audio, and more. Because the Mac version of Wolf 3D came out later, it featured higher resolution graphics and an engine capable of more things than the original. It was super fun to be a part of this. But what's really surprising is that there is currently an ongoing effort to bring the Mac Wolfenstein 3D mods back to modern systems. It's called Mac and Wolf, and I'd highly recommend that you Google it if you are interested in checking out some vintage classic gameplay. That's M-A-C-E-N Wolf. Have fun, everyone. I'll end on this note. I am normally an optimist, and I would normally never cast doubt on something I truly love, but I am sorry to say that unless OLR moves to a more frequent broadcast schedule, it will never reach episode 9,000 with its current hosts. Well, that is unless you're good to go for another 156 years or more, if you miss more than a few weeks. I'm sorry to have to deliver the bad news. But honestly, thank you for another week of this show that we all enjoy so much. And enjoy your week off. Looking forward to whatever is next, Aaron YYR.
Well, you know, we can number these episodes however the fuck we want to. So when we
is arbitrary.
When we want to do episode 9,000, we will. Well, you know, and there's another podcast out there, Gamertag Radio, who crossed 1,000 episodes, even though they started 2-3 years after we did. Sorry, I don't know the exact day. I'm certainly not here to shade anybody. There's a lot of work that went into that. Danny and the crew over there work very hard on what they do. But they also put out multiple episodes a week. And I think during E3, a lot of episodes, historically. So, they were kind of able to, and so a lot of people assume that that is the longest running show because they have more episodes. There was a time when I was, clipping up, some of you may remember this, some of you longtime listeners, where I was clipping up OLR and I was putting out the first half on the feed on Monday and the second half on Wednesday to try to kind of fill the week. But the big feedback I got after about a year was like, stop doing that. We just want to listen to it all in one, you know, go. And I did kind of go like, why am I doing that? But it's funny because, you know, maybe if I counted those as separate episodes, we would have hit 1,000 by now. But I'm not out to yuck somebody's yum. Like, it's just, you know, it is what it is. We've done a weekly thing and
no pissing in the cornflakes.
Exactly. So, I guess my point is, Aaron, if you do want us to hit 9,000 episodes, I guess I could start chopping up the show into 5-minute chunks and releasing those all as separate episodes. But I'm not sure what the podcast folks would think about that. So Pod Culture says there was also OLR to go. The interesting thing about that is that before the shows merged, so our live show and the podcast merged around episode 180. I want to say question mark. It's probably on the wiki somewhere. So yeah, technically there were 50 episodes or so of the show that weren't like accounted for somewhere else. But I think there would be other people that would argue, well, the shows that weren't actually a podcast that we did on Live 365 shouldn't be counted. And I beg to differ because they exist and we've been doing them. But again, it's just, it's arbitrary, just like Darsakra said. It's all in what you choose to do and how you want to do it. So S200 Matt says, each story is an episode. You'll hit 9,000, no problem. And yes, Dark Tetsuya, absolutely. He just wants the chance to make the over 9,000 joke. Absolutely. You know what? One of these days.
Over 9,000 words spoken.
That's right.
So where are we on that the Guinness thing?
I already
they sent it back, remember?
Oh,
because we have to do it as a company. I didn't resubmit because we need to have the like some sort of company way to do it.
I think we could probably submit it under Vogue Network, but I think there'd be a charge with that, so we'd have to figure that all out.
There's still going to be a free one. The charge comes if you want the accelerated application.
Oh, okay. Maybe we can do that then.
I've got to dig into it, but I've had real life stuff going on too, so my health issues have taken priority because I'm still dealing with that whole narcolepsy diagnosis crap.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. All right, Pod Culture. I remember that we'd record Pod Culture in a chunk, and I'd chop it up. Yeah, and it just, you know, it just is all depends on how you want to do it. No biggie. All right. Let's see. I didn't check Discord to see if we had any callers over there. If you want to give us a call, you can just head on over to VogueNetwork.com/Discord and join our green room. Nobody's there now. And I know we just have a smaller turnout live tonight because of things that are going on television, even though my understanding is it's over now. But I'm sure folks are still with their, you know, friends, family, and people they hang out with on days like today. So it's probably just going to be more of a podcast-heavy week, and that's okay, too. We love our podcast audience. Feel free to say hi to us either on social media, like Twitter's a great place to say hi, @OLR. And, of course, the email bag as well, like Aaron did this week. Participate@orangeloungeradio.com is the place to send us an email. Let me check in with Loki and see if there's any last-minute stories.
Yes, there is one. So there's a game coming out called Martha is Dead. It's coming out on PC, PlayStation, and
Xbox. Saw this
Xbox
on Discord, yeah.
So on the PlayStation version, they're actually censoring the game because there's a very sensitive scene that's being depicted in the game. Spoilers, they cut off someone's face and then put it on. So that apparently is not going to be on the PlayStation 5 and PlayStation 4 versions, but the other versions will be just fine.
This game sounds like a bit much Pretty for me. Though. Yeah, it sounds like it's
But that said, though,
porn.
Like, they had really violent stuff, though, in, like, Last of Us 2 and stuff, so, like, I don't know.
Did they cut off someone's face?
I don't know. I didn't play Last of Us 2.
Wasn't there also something about, like, the sister? There was something, like, really weird sounding, and I was just like, this game isn't for me. That's all. I read it, and I was like, this game isn't for me. S200 Matt in chat says, people are so mad about this. Well, then don't buy it.
On PlayStation.
Yeah, it's like, it's pretty simple. Sia Tiberi in chat says, it's not as if they were renaming at Martha's badly maimed. Fifth Dream says, oh, it's your sister's face? That's gross. What a weird game. But hey, y'all are into whatever you're into. Enjoy your horror porn if that's your thing.
It's
I will
fine.
Be watching
I
from over here.
I watched Face Off once already, so it's all good.
think that was a little different. All right. If there's no other last minute stories, then I think we will move to close up shop tonight. I know it's a little bit earlier. We still broke 2 hours, but it is what it is. So let's go around and wrap things up. First, let me say thank you, of course, for listening to Orange Lounge Radio this week. Whether you were here live or on our podcast feed, we appreciate you being here. Thank you so much for being a part of our show. Don't forget, emails are great, and joining our Discord throughout for the conversation throughout the week is also great as well. VogNetwork.com/Discord. If you enjoyed what you heard here, tell a friend about the show. Help us spread the word, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we need more voices here to diversify all the opinions. So a nice 5-star review or a shareable link wherever you're listening to this podcast, be it iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever it is. Please share the link, spread the word. Appreciate that as well. I think that's all I've got to say here, so I'm going to go to final thoughts. And Dark Sakura, I'm sure you're getting an early start to Miss Debbie Delight tonight, so I'll go to you first, your final thoughts.
It would be nice to be done with Debbie a little earlier tonight than usual, because I always do 3 hours. But I've really missed my retro gaming, and I'm glad to have a chance to get back into it. So if anyone has a suggestion for something that they'd want to see me play, apart from The Legend of Zelda, you know, let me know. Hit me up. Tell me if you think I should play something. I'll give it a go.
Sounds good.
I'm easy. I'm not easy. I'm easy in the video game sense.
All right.
Also, my house smells like chicken.
Have a good stream tonight, Dark Sakura. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right. See you then.
All right. And we'll go to Loki. Your final thought tonight.
I keep saying that I need to get in the streaming. I need to get back in the streaming.
Yes, you should. Yes, you should. All right. And for my final thought tonight, I guess I'll change the shot here. And you may see some unsightly things in the shot. Oh, no. It's still pretty decent shape here. But there it is, the studio, and the last hurrah from this particular studio that served us well over these last few years, about 7 years. Thank you all for being a part of it, whether you've been here on Twitch as we made the transition to go to video on Twitch, or whether you were here through the Shoutcast years as well, because this place was really only set up to do audio, but we've seen all the changes and so forth as well. So big farewell to Studio N7. I am really looking forward to the future, though. I appreciate everyone's support as we get there. I know some people really want us to all be back in person. It's just one of those things we'll have to play by ear, because, again, the new space is going to be a little weird for that, especially with Twitch. But we'll see. I think we're still having fun here the way we're doing things. I really can't wait to be in the next space, though, and I'm really excited to share it all with you. So I'll see you in 2 weeks. If not, maybe a little sooner on my personal feed. We'll see. Maybe. But no promises. So have a great week. 2 weeks, everybody. We'll see you next time here on Orange Lounge Radio. Good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.